What happened to music that meant something?
The Who at the Kingdom or Kiss at the Coliseum. Where is the Misty Mountain Hop? Where is the Smoke on the Water? Where is the Iron Man of today?
Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll.
Throughout their 40-year career, the Mekons have always been first and foremost about musical risk-taking and freedom. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. Members of the Mekons join us for a special acoustic performance, and we'll review the new album from Dorn Richard. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
This is Sound Opinions, and this week's guests are the Mekons. No hype, Jim. It is the longest-running transcontinental punk band in the world.
That's true, but I don't know if there's any competition in that field.
Certainly in the top five, right? 40 years, formed at the height of the punk era, contemporaries of the Sex Pistols and the Clash. The Clash just came out with White Riot. These art school students from Leeds, England say, hey, let's form a band and let's do a song and let's call it Never Been in a Riot.
Right. Not us. Contrarians to this day, 40 years later.
Yes, they've been fighting against the man and various other things ever since. These working class roots, though, that they've spoken to really came to the fore when they started performing benefit shows for the British miners' strike in the early 80s. And then exploring American country music. Here are these art punk kids from England fascinated by American country music. Hank Williams, Jimmy Rogers, and doing their own twisted take on it. Fear and Whiskey, one of those landmark albums that a lot of critics heard, was an import, mid-80s. And American critics went crazy over it. That brought the band from overseas to start touring America. And Jim, you and I have seen countless Mekon shows between us. I think that's where the real proof of this band's brilliance occurs, is on that stage. Because anything can happen. They can fall flat on their face. And other nights, it is just the most brilliant thing you've ever seen. Very similar to the Replacements in some ways in that regard.
Yeah, with half the band based in Chicago, half the band based in the UK still, I had to wrestle, Greg, with this because I knew about the punk roots, but now I'm a Chicago music journalist in the 90s. It's like, who are these old or aging, English people playing country music, right? But you have to remember that the music of the British Isles, in particularly the Scots-Irish tradition, migrated over here with American settlers and became country and Western, and then the Mekons claimed it and took it back. I'm always sympathetic to new arrivals to the Mekons, young listeners or older listeners who've never encountered them, because where do you start? There's such a discography there. For you, it's Fear and Whiskey. I would recommend So Good It Hurts, because when Sally Timms comes on board, and that's really her album, the magic is there.
Yes, there's been a revolving door lineup in some ways with this band, but John Langford and Tom Greenhall have been the constant. Sally Timms has been there for a long time. We had half the band here recently. Jim Langford and Green Hall were in the studio with us, as well as Lou Edmonds, another longtime member, the man of many stringed instruments. Mm. He brought a saz along with him this time, a Mediterranean stringed instrument, which he played on this stripped-down performance, which harkens to their country roots.
Absolutely. You know, Greg, I think the issue with a band that's been together for four decades is how do they keep things fresh? They found a really unique way to record efficiently in a different way than they'd done before and to involve their fans on their latest record, Existentialism. Here's first John Langford and then Tom Greenhall telling a story of how being an ocean apart from one another helped birth this unusual idea.
Tom lives in the West Country in England. I live here in Chicago. And Tom had an idea we should make the next album just on a phone and it should just be...
I was thinking, you know...
What's the point?
The way the music business is, no one buys CDs or, you know, a smaller level. So in a way, you're wasting a lot of time and money recording something over days and weeks. So why not do it as simply as possible?
So explain the concept. You went from this... We're going to do this really small, urgent recording to expanding it to where you included people you had never met before.
Yeah, well, that was the next phase of the plan. It was all, you know, forced by economics. So that how you don't make any money from this recording. So how can we make some money off the recording that we're not going to make any money off?
So you have crowdfunding and we decided to have choir funding.
Rather than just have people send us money, we offered them the chance to, you know, do you want to be on a Mekons album? And 75 people came, and then they were put through hell for some hours.
The people who wanted to do that had to obviously pay a small ticket price for the privilege
of being on a Mekons record.
I want to get this straight, Tom. So people paid you to make them uncomfortable and harass
Marx
them for
said,
hours.
As Marx said, the mode of production determines the mode of consciousness. was what this was all about.
So why introduce the wild? I mean, you could have done the record in 5 hours with just the group, and that would have been in and of itself an accomplishment. But you add this wild card of these 75.
Well, they're the people that
financed
the project.
They were singing. They were also the executive producers of the record, basically.
So, right.
Yeah, you're missing the key there. They paid for the whole shebang.
Well, it's Kickstarter with a Kickstarter and a live album rolled into one.
It's like less just straight out begging.
Yeah, you know,
which we felt that was quite uncomfortable.
But I mean, such a strange concept. This crowdfunded chaos. What would have happened, boys, if none of these people could have sung?
Well, no, they're not
that
sure.
Was
they
the
could.
Idea.
Oh,
I mean,
okay, all right,
great.
All right.
Because absolutely, there's these people doing things with feral choirs. Mm-hmm. Of completely untrained singers, and it's all quite interesting. There's a lot of stuff going on with the idea of getting people to sing, regardless of their so-called ability. You know,
we thought of it more like sound effects, really. Than mm-hmm. rather,
yeah, mm-hmm. Like you get 50 people murmuring. It sounds great.
But it has sort of an eerie undertow. It does add an element of atmosphere to the recording that's very strange and surreal and kind of cool. Did it work out to your expectations the way you thought it was going to come out?
I didn't have any expectations.
I kind of didn't have any definite mm-hmm. preconceived idea of what it was going to actually sound like. So what it sounded like was right.
We got Tony Mamone to record it who was the bass player in Pere Ubu, and he's mm-hmm. got a studio in Brooklyn. So he came down, you know, did the thing with the one microphone, and, you know, he did a really great job. We were seriously thinking it was going to sound like it was recorded on someone's phone.
One microphone.
We were a bit worried about the acoustic being a little, just making it sound a bit, you know, just boring or something. Mm-hmm. But it was really great the way it actually turned out. We'll be right back.
No, it sounds wonderful. And you, being the Mekons, you're not going to play any songs from the new recording, it sounds like, right? Are you going
to
play?
We've actually been rehearsing a couple of them to play live, but should we do one? This was called The Wasted Winds Were Blowing.
I dreamed a dream the other night. The wasted winds were blowing. I dreamed a dream the other night. The wasted winds did blow. I dreamed I saw my own true love. The wasted winds are blowing. I dreamed that I saw John, but the wind blew him away. With straw and leaves all in her hair, the wasted winds are blowing. The dust and sand was in her hair, the wasted winds do blow. She was here once, but now has gone, the wasted winds do blow.
Mekons, or part of them, live on Sound Opinions. We're in the studio with John Langford, Lou Edmonds on the amplified oud over there.
Saz.
I'm sorry. And Tom Greenhall. Part of the Mekons, as I said, a large lineup ever shifting through the years, 40 years of history. Where would you encourage people to start? You know, by my count, and this is a conservative count, 20 Mekons albums. You know, it's a daunting discography. Lou, what do you tell people?
I've never started.
It doesn't help, does it?
I say come to a gig. Yeah, just come see us live.
Ah,
easy. I think so. That's probably the right answer.
Yeah, well, because that's where you are at the moment. And every gig is different. Every gig is special.
That's right.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's like, how do you start with any sort of big thing that you can't just grasp in 5 minutes?
Keep asking the questions, you'll get your reply. Nothing there, nothing there. Peel back the onion till there's nothing there. Layer by layer till there's nothing there.
At a certain point, you know, you mentioned 40 years. That's a long history and a long legacy with a lot of songs, a lot of records. It always seemed to me like you're always willing to play your new stuff in shows. You know, it's very difficult as a so-called heritage band not to be bound by your past. What has kept you out of that hole? That, you know, you're obviously
all the other heritage bands how boring it looks. Well, to be honest,
is that the reason the band keeps going? Because in a lot of ways, I think it has to do with the fact that the next thing is the more exciting thing to you all the time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It was an art school. We were art students and we were, you know, messing around with the idea of what it would be like to do a band because we weren't very interested in painting at that time.
I don't think people come and see the Mekons to hear a particular song. I think they come to just see a show, and everything the Mekons does revolves around the show. Mm-hmm. And we could play anything, and often we do, and we don't even know what we're doing. So it doesn't make any difference. So if these heritage bands, they've fallen in love with the huge success that they had in
the 80s. That's the trouble.
We never had any success.
we didn't have any attention, you know, whenever it was in 85 or going through that period of time, you know, to sort of think of it as being heritage. Mm-hmm. And so we could do what we wanted, and no one's going to say you can't do that. You've got to play your hits.
Right. I'm sensing the recurring theme of be here now. The magic happens when you guys come together. The magic happens when you're on stage. You're here now. What are you going to play for us?
We've been quite adventurous, I would say, yeah, because we haven't... That last one we hadn't... That was the first time we'd ever tried to play that, yep. So... I don't think we ever played this.
We've never played this.
This was recorded in a studio in 1989.
The original recording.
Rock and Roll album.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay, so it's from Rock and Roll back in 89.
Did you ever hear about Cocaine Lil? She lived in Cocaine Town on a cocaine hill. She had a cocaine dog, a cocaine cat, and they fought all night with a cocaine rat. She had cocaine hair on a cocaine head. She had a cocaine dress that was poppy red. She wore a snowbird hat and sleigh ride shoes. On her coat she wore a crimson cocaine rose. Big red chariots on the Milky Way. Snakes and elephants, silver and gray. Oh, the cocaine blues, they make me sad. Oh, the cocaine blues make me feel so bad. She went to a party one cold night. The way she sniffed was sure a fright. There was morphine Sue and the poppy face kid climbing up snow ladders, and down they slid. Along in the morning about 3:30, they were all lit up like a Christmas tree. When she got home and started for bed, she took another sniff and it knocked her dead. They laid her out in her cocaine clothes, wore a snowbird hat and a crimson rose. On her headstone,
that is Cocaine Lil from the Mekons, live on Sound Opinions.
When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with the Mekons and hear about their less than positive experience with a major label. Go to soundopinions.org for exclusive video of the Mekons acoustic set. Later, we're going to review the new record from singer Dawn Richard. That's coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
I'm
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and this week we're talking to the musical collective The Mekons. So with a band that's been together for about 40 years, I mean, where do you start with that vast catalog? Let's talk about 1989. That's a period of the band's career that they're on the brink of something like success. They were signed to A&M Records. They'd made an album called The Mekons Rock and Roll, which pretty much everybody who heard it loved it. It was the best-selling album in the Mekons' career to this day, selling about 30,000 copies at the time. And it elated the Mekons and their fan base, but the label wasn't too thrilled. That number, 30,000, that just doesn't work for A&M Records. I'm sorry, you know? So we asked the band to talk about what happened at that crucial point in their career. Singer and guitarist John Langford stepped up first.
Basically, the guy who signed us left almost immediately, and he had a kind of idea that he was going to bring independence into the kind of major label marketplace and give us small budgets and control, and just so we didn't have the kind of disasters we had of like independent distribution collapsing all the time. And
right.
So he was really good. We liked him. And then he left and went somewhere else because they wouldn't let him do what he wanted to do. But we were signed there. And then a bunch of accountants from L.A. came and like poked us with sticks and realized we were useless. So we asked if we could leave, and then they said
we had a big fight. And they said the next album we did was substandard.
Right, right.
Which was the curse of the Mekons, so they never put it out. But fortunately, we hadn't signed for the world; we'd only signed for America. So that album was never really released in America.
Yeah, the curse of the Mekons could only be gotten as an import immediately after your major label debut and finale, all in one. So the reason I'm asking this about the major label experience, you have been indie, independent almost all along. And, you know, Jim and I have referred to in various incarnations, the last punk band standing, things like this. And people said, they're not a punk band. They don't sound like punks. And I go, well, they're more punk than any band you could name. But you did form in that era, and I think there was a spirit that informed the bands more so than a sound. I want to ask you guys what that era meant to you in terms of your ideals and ethics when it came to making music and making art, in terms of the way it informed the way you operate as a band.
I think there was definitely a kind of zero effect going on with that time. Before punk happened, I was obviously into music, but I never really saw it being something that I could actually do. It was only like really big bands did that. And then suddenly the whole ground was raised, you know, with what was happening with punk and the Sex Pistols and all of that. It suddenly kind of happened, you know. And I think it was really, really important because it just gave permission for anybody and everybody to do whatever they wanted to do. And it was not the whole stylization of what punk might be supposed to look like or sound like. It was obviously something that happened over time.
But I think of the bands we used to play with, like the Russell Club in Manchester, Tony Wilson was doing these nights, early factory nights, and we'd be there with, you know, the Slits were there one night, we were from the Gang of Four, but then we'd be like the Human League. Mm-hmm. From Sheffield, Cabaret Voltaire, there was this mad electronic scene there. Then there was these other bands from Scotland, like the Scars and the Fire Engines, and yeah, there wasn't a sound. It was just an idea.
There wasn't any rules. And if you look at the punk scene now, I don't know, maybe you know better than me, but it seems very formulaic. And you got to do this, you got to wear the jacket. But actually, in those days, it was very, very broad and open, and a lot of different things going on.
Well, sell us some Mekons music. What are you going to play?
We'll do The Last Dance from the Fear and Whiskey record. But actually, we'll do the version from the, what's it called?
The English Dancing
the
Master.
The English Dancing Master.
dance floor's nearly empty now. Everyone's gone home. We're fragmented and broken up like love affairs. And as if seeing you for the first time, something whispered. Looking at you in desperation, knowing nothing ever happens.
I wanted to say fall in love. I wanted to say fall in love with me. I wanted to say fall in love.
It'll be alright. You were waltzing, little frozen rivers all covered with snow. All fragmented and broken up. Oh, well, I guess it's time to go. Looking at you in desperation, knowing nothing ever happens.
I wanted to say fall in love. I wanted to say fall in love with me. I wanted to say fall in love.
It'll be alright.
You were waltzing.
The Last Dance by the Mekons, live on Sound Opinions. John Langford, Tom Greenhall, Lou Edmonds. It's such a treat for us to have you guys here in the studio.
So the lineup of the Mekons has been very fluid for decades. I've heard the band described as not so much a band but a collective. What was your conception of what the Mekons were going to be? Was it a band in your mind? Was it something that was going to incorporate these many incarnations of art and multimedia as music? I mean,
it was just meant to be the opening band for the Gang of Four and a couple of gigs in 1977.
It was just meant to be very sort of democratic in the sense that there was no sort of qualifications required for anything to do it. So you didn't have to know how to play an instrument, for example, to be able to be on stage playing an instrument. So, you know, it was very, very sort of free in that way. So there was absolutely no concept of anything going for any further.
Was there a point where you thought this is? I know there was a period there in the early '80s where it was sort of like a little nip and tuck about whether or not this was ever going to continue. And I just wonder how many periods there were like that in the band where you felt like, well, the Mekons really don't exist for me anymore. Or was there always a feeling that there would be new work? coming.
I think we were quite bloody-minded at that point because we were sort of told, the industry had kind of told us we couldn't do it anymore, and it was, you know... And
we didn't deserve to exist.
So so things like the Mekon story and then the English Dancing Master were kind of created almost entirely in the wilderness with no thought that anyone would ever hear
them.
They're
complete underground records with, you know, where the band was just maybe three or four people.
But a social grouping, really.
And the social network of about 25 other people. And that was it. That was literally it. There was no, the world was that small. But I was going to say initially, I think what started it all off was the fact that after literally our first and a half gig, we were approached to make a single. And that was like very strange. And that was, could only really have happened at that point in time, in you know, when it was all really kicking off. And that whole thing from just doing this thing because we were free to do it to then suddenly putting a record out and then suddenly the record being, you know, Tony Parsons' NME single of the week and John Peel playing it on the radio.
John Peel played it.
It all suddenly went, you know, like...
Changed things.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Immediately, we had to sort of deal with all of that, and so it was a very steep sort of learning curve. And but because we came from a certain place and time and ideas of what we were doing, I think we've had to retain that to be able to function. And every time we've kind of lost that slightly, that's when it's gone wrong. You know, all the major label kind of stuff. You know.
I have to say, though, the records we made on A&M were actually all right.
Yeah, I'm sort of talking about...
I like
about
those records, but it was, like, a really distressing time in our lives, I think.
It wasn't good, sort of...
Like, morale-wise, we were kind of having a really hard time.
So the only thing that could kill the Mekons would be success.
Possibly, possibly. We were really, well, the Chicago connection.
Depends what you mean by success, because I think we are very successful.
Yeah,
yes, anyway. And that you create in your own terms and enjoy the process. No, I meant like making
money.
Like, you know, stinking rotten money.
I'd like to try. I'd like to sort of see if we can resist.
You've got an open mind.
Yeah.
You'd be willing to give it a shot. So, you've always been proud of the heritage of the UK, Wales, England, but you love this music of America. You know, one of the twists is the increasing influence of country music and American music and American soul music, really. Do you still love this music? Are you still mystified by this country the way you were when you began to fall in love with these sounds?
That's interesting. Yeah, you know what? Actually, I've been real fortunate lately just to travel a lot and bump into a lot of really, you know, interesting things. So down in, I've been in Nashville a lot and New Orleans, and there's a lot going on here that's outside the mainstream.
So it still gets you excited?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's still a sense of regionalism in America that it gets sort of rubbed out by the mainstream, and you don't notice it. But when you do travel like that, you notice that there's still these pockets of culture that have been unaffected by that. And sometimes it takes people from overseas to come here and remind us of that. You know?
Well, like, I was going to say, I mean, it's very easy if you're looking at America from a distance to just see it as this horrible corporate monster. But actually, there's so many different Americas. And once you get that, it's fascinating. I kind of see it as almost like some sort of weird science fiction adventure where you get, you know, English traditional music coming here and getting mutated into something else and then mixing with all these other things. It's very strange in a lot of ways, but really interesting.
Well, it was interesting because I talked, John, I think I remember talking to you years ago, and something you said to me really stuck with me about the Mekons. And that was that, you know, you loved these kinds of music, and it was kind of almost a case of imitation. You know, we want to play like that, or we want to copy that, or we want to take some of that, and then getting it so wrong, and then you forge a sound.
I think it's more like osmosis. Really. Yeah. We steeped ourselves in a lot of that stuff. Listened and listened and listened to sort of, but I don't think we really tried to imitate. I think we just sort of, then different things came.
Yeah,
out.
We caught a sort of influence, but not way trying to actually copy it, you know.
Right.
We had a Jimmy Rogers obsession, you know, for quite a while.
And Hank Williams, of course.
And then like Cajun music as well.
And I think you guys can take credit. I know that my knowledge of country was very limited when I heard Fear and Whiskey, for example, and I went back and started listening to some of that stuff because of the Mekons. And here's this band from overseas telling me about the music that's right under my nose and, you know, finding out about that music that way. What are we going to hear next?
Yeah, we need another song, boys.
Going all the way back to something that can't be promoted. this beat number one? Yeah. One, two, three, two, two, three.
Somebody woke me this morning, and I didn't know where I was. The person I spent the night with just looked at me inside. And I caught a train to Sheffield, but in my mind I was already in hell. I betrayed a friend, and broken to the end. Me, I just rolled over and died, thinking about the things that I'd done. Well, you know, they don't better be repeated, 'cause I live them in a haze of disgust. Well, I cut a train to Sheffield, but in my mind I was already in hell. I betrayed a friend, bitter and broken to the end. Love to pass out on your shoulder as we dip in the pockets of love. Well, I caught a train to Sheffield, but in my mind I was already in hell. I betrayed a friend, beaten and broken to the end.
We have been speaking with the Mekons on Sound Opinions. We can't thank John, Tom, and Lou enough for coming in. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
That wraps up our time with the Mekons, but you can visit soundopinions.org for exclusive video footage of these live performances. Do you have a story about the Mekons or an opinion you want to share? Call 888-859-1800 and leave us a message. Or connect with us on Twitter and Facebook.
When we come back, we review the latest from singer Dawn Richard. And Greg, you've got a song you can't live without for the Desert Island Jukebox, right?
Yeah, Jim, I'm going to play an artist that has influenced both Pete Townsend and Randy Newman.
Good stuff. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Come with us, oh come along. There's something going wrong. Tomorrow morning I must work. I know that you'll be gone. For those in peril on the seaside, put our faith on hold. Best to vanish with a warning, our land out of control. Deep and still, blood on the water, things unsaid, hold them in our hands. Now behold the visible other, phantoms stalk the land.
No.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. He is Greg Kot, and that is a track called Love Under Lights from the new album Redemption by Dawn Richard. This is the fourth solo album of her career, Greg, but she's had an interesting pre-career before she struck out on her own. She is born Dawn Angelique. Her dad is named Frank Richard. He's a rather famous percussionist and vocalist in New Orleans. His daughter goes to the University of New Orleans and starts out working as a cheerleader for the New Orleans Hornets. She winds up as part of a pop group, I would say a second tier, Destiny's Child, in the mid-2000s, Danity Kane. They put out two albums that sell a fair amount, are not particularly well remembered. Dawn goes off and then does some time with Diddy, a short-lived supergroup, Daddy Diddy Dirty Money. I know you were a big fan. All right, I'm kind of sneering here because none of this would lead you to expect an interesting solo career, but she is now on album number 4. It is the last album of a trilogy, and she had some very ambitious goals here. She said she wanted to make a record that is for everybody, every gay, every fluid, every black, every white. Has she succeeded? We'll play a track, and then we'll come back and give our reviews. This is a song called L.A. It's got an interesting guest artist here. Trombone Shorty has been a performer here on Sound Opinions. L.A. by Dawn Richard from the album Redemption on Sound Opinions.
Lemonade licks in the Fiesta, in the Chevy going 90 down La Brea. Cause the bitch don't matter. MJ on the radio, so we bless her. MJ on the right. He's always chasing answers. We just wanna know if it really matters. We just wanna know. Yeah. We thought we was above it all. Cause the Francis Wayne was a hot boy. He said we should keep driving for the sake of surviving. Now we hot boy. We thought we was above it all. Cause my Francis Wayne was a hot boy. He said we should keep driving for the sake of surviving. Now we hot boy. These LA streets are killing me. These LA streets are killing me. These are the streets that are killing me. These are the
That is L.A. from the new Don Richard album, Redemption. Jim, that song speaks very eloquently to the ambition in this record. It's a sweet-like track. It starts out with this electronic groove, and then you've got this big guitar solo that seems imported from the 70s. And then you've got this great trumpet coda by Trombone Shorty at the end of the song. So she's threading together all these different musical styles. Soundscapes as much as songs. This whole idea of dance music being morphed into protest music. She's very ambitious in her approach. If you know her only from Danity Kane, boy, have you got an education ahead of you. It truly is a different take. You know, this Afrofuturism, this idea of, you know, take me to a better place, this notion of speaking up for the rebels, the people who are the outcasts, the misfits. If you are a certain color, if you're a certain gender or sexual orientation in this country, she's speaking up for those people who don't have a voice. You know, the fact that she's from Creole and Haitian descent. You know, New Orleans is an open city, but she grew up amid a lot of prejudice there as well. And fusing these thoughts into music that is not conventional by any sense of the word, finally concluding with this whole notion of running away with me. The open dreams where rebels are the majority and my color isn't minority.
Escape open dreams where rebels are the majority and my color isn't minority.
So there's also a sense of escape, but there's also a sense of, you know, when will this occur? When will we be able to realize an open and more conciliatory society? Doesn't seem to be in my future. It's a beautiful record, a surprising record. The trilogy is great music, and this is a buy it record for me.
I agree, Greg. It is a buy it, and I wouldn't have thought I'd ever say that about Don Richard. I had to go back and appreciate the earlier two installments of the trilogy. She's created something really exciting, but this is the place to start. I think Redemption is the strongest of these three records. She has gotten most comfortable with this sort of introspective, laid-back mix of psychedelia, EDM, even a little bit of indie rock. This is something we're hearing from other artists at a tempo that's similar. The Weeknd and Solange, I think, are very similar right now. You said that it's interesting to hear that dance music can be political again after a long time of it not being so. I also think it's interesting that that dance music, electronic dance music, can be so introspective. She is considering her place in the world. She's considering the state of the universe. Mm-hmm. There's some spirituality here. You know, she's looking for love, but she's also taking stock of her career and her life. I think having had that weird pop past, she's happy where she is now, and she's taking real artistic chances. So an enthusiastic double buy it.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
As often as possible here on Sound Opinions, one of us takes a trip to the desert island, pops a quarter in the jukebox, and plays you a song we can't live without. Greg, it's your pick. What do you got?
Jim, I wanted to acknowledge in greater depth Mose Allison. We sort of briefly touched on the fact that Mose died on November 15th at age 89. I mean, it has been a horrible year from a standpoint of legends dying one after another, and almost too many to keep up with, right? Mose was certainly among those legends, and I feel he deserved a little bit more than we were able to give him at the time. One of my favorite artists, but forget about that. I mean, the influence that he had on popular music over the last 40 years cannot be overestimated. He is one of those artists who was steeped in blues, grew up in Mississippi, but also was a great jazz piano player. He would sing these very relaxed, drawling vocals over his swinging, bluesy piano. And his style of music really caught the ear of a lot of musicians in the UK. Here's this southern-born artist in America making music in the 50s that was blowing the minds of a young Pete Townsend and a young John Mayall. people like that, Georgie Fame. Georgie Fame and Mayall both recorded versions of a Mose Allison song called Parchment Farm, which is actually a big dance number in the UK in the early 60s. But the other thing about Mose that I think Pete Townsend picked up, and certainly Randy Newman, who cannot be heard without referencing Mose Allison, is the humor and the satire. There was social satire in Mose's music. So when you listen to a piece of music like Parchment Farm, sitting over here on Parchment Farm, the place is loaded with rustic charm. Mm. I mean, he's talking about a Mississippi prison,
right?
You know, and he's basically, the sarcasm is just dripping off that drawl. When he sang a song like Young Man's Blues, which The Who covered on the Live at Leeds record, in bombastic fashion.
Yeah.
They were channeling that sense of, you know, a young man has a place in this society. You don't know it yet, but I'm going to make you aware of my existence in a matter of minutes. And Mose was saying it in much more subtle style when he recorded the song originally in the 50s. So it's instructive to hear what Mose did with that song first that made Pete Townsend's ears prick up. Here is Young Man Blues from Mose Allison on Sound Opinions.
Oh, well, a young man ain't nothing in this world these days. I said a young man ain't nothing in this world these days. In the old days, when a young man was a strong man, all the people stand back when a young man walked by. But nowadays, the old man got all the money, and a young man ain't nothing in this world these days.
Young Man's Blues by Mose Allison on Sound Opinions. I will take that version over The Who's bombastic version any day, Greg. A good Desert Island Jukebox pick. What do we have on the show next week?
Well, Jim, just for the record, I like them both, but they're very different. There's no doubt about it.
We got to have our fight again about Entwistle and Moon being the most overrated team in history. But what's on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're going to take a look at some of our favorite songs of 2016 with our annual mixtape show.
Greg, we have some thank yous to say. Andrew Gill and Mary Gaffney helped us with the Mekons. And of course, Sound Opinions is produced by Brendan Banizak, Evan Chung, and Alex Claiborne.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So now it's time to hear what you have to say.
Messages. Hey, Sound Opinions. This is Adam from Chicago, Illinois. I'm originally from Duluth, Minnesota, and I'm listening to your Christmas show right now. And you said to call in with some maybe forgotten or neglected Christmas songs. There's a song that's kind of based around Duluth, Minnesota. It's called Christmas City. It was written by a guy named Don Peterson, who was friends at the time with Merv Griffin before he became the successful multimedia TV personality guy that he was, recorded the vocals for it. They played every year around Christmas time in Duluth, but I feel like it's kind of a neat little Christmas song all about Duluth, Minnesota, which is a place that I Love a whole bunch. Hope you guys give it a listen. Merry Christmas.
And Christmas City, gotta stay happy, make a smile ball. That's the kind of throw. Christmas City, wonderful city. Come this Christmas to the Christmas City. Let's go.
I hear bells ringing. Hi, my name is Anthony Austin. I'm calling from Mount Prospect, Illinois, and my favorite holiday song of all time is The Stooges' I Want to Be Your Dog. From their 1969 debut, I love the bells in that song. It just sounds like Christmas, because I don't like Christmas songs at all, except that one. Thanks for doing this, guys. Bye-bye.
Hi, my name is Karen from Glen Ellen. I'd like to nominate a song for a Christmas song that should have been a huge hit, and that is Burt Bacharach's The Bell That Couldn't Jingle. It is such an adorable song. I have to play it every year, and other people I've played it for agree that this is a great song and people should hear it more often. Bye.
Hi, my name is Eric from Montreal, Quebec. I'm calling to say my favorite holiday song is a song called December is for Cynics by The Matches. And what I love about it is it's a great anti-Christmas song, anti-commercialism, whatever. And there's also a line in it, December is for critics. So I thought you guys might enjoy that. Cheers, happy holidays.
My name is Scott from Gary, Indiana. And my favorite Christmas song is Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time. Now, I don't tell people this because it's generally an agreement across the board that everyone hates the song except for me. But there's just something about the song that reminds me of this special time of year. It just doesn't feel like Christmas without hearing it. And so I love it. Just don't tell anybody I told you that.
The mood is right. The spirit's up. We're here tonight. And that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The party's on.
No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.